Flyers Daily with Jason Mertidis.
It is a brand new edition of Flyers Daily, a Monday edition, and rookie camp is underway. A couple of rookie games in the rear view, some news around the league, and a little preview of what does this begin this week, which is training camp 2023. If I was a player, I'd be dreading day one. I know that much. And getting on the ice without a puck in sight. But joining us on this episode, as he does every Monday, from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, NHL.com, and HockeyBuzz.com, it is Bill Meltzer. Bill, it was great to see hockey this weekend. It was great to be back in the rink and experiencing high-level hockey, and it felt real good to be back home. It felt like it was back home, at least.
It sure did. You know, actually, you know, to see all the Flyers people in the building, you know, a sense of energy going in there. You know, Jonesy was making the rounds. Danny Briere was around. You know, it's sometimes you go to Allentown or other buildings too, particularly to follow the farm team. And it, you know, it's before the season, but you don't really see, you know, the team brass around. They're kind of huddled in the team box. So it was you know, it was really a nice start to the season. Obviously, you know, wins and losses don't really matter in the exhibition season, especially in a rookie's game. Would have liked to have seen, you know, different outcomes, but that didn't spoil what a really nice weekend it was, and just how nice it is to have hockey back.
Can I just start here and just say that was my first experience inside the PPL Center in Allentown, home of the Phantoms, and I was blown away by the building. Yeah. It is such a cool barn, and it was a great place to watch hockey. Not a bad seat in the house. I imagine it's a great place to see concerts as well, because it looks like it's fitted for that. But that's got to be one of the nicer homes in the AHL, no?
Oh, no question. No question. You know, it's by American League standards, it's a state-of-the-art facility. You know, and when they had the first event, and now this is year 10, believe it or not, of the PPL. So I feel like it just opened. But it's year 10 of hockey there. And the first event there was a scrimmage with the Flyers and the Phantoms, the Battle in Hamilton, I think it was called. And before that, the Flyers had played a few years in Glens Falls at you know, the old Civic Center there. And I mean, it was just obsolete. You know, it was an obsolete facility with a storied history, mind you, but really not a viable American League facility. And they went from there to virtually almost like a small NHL rink. You know, little things like if a player gets injured and needs an MRI, they have the facility there to do that. A really, really nice locker room. I mean, it's a, you know, pretty cool. It's a nice press box. It's a nice building. I mean, it's, you know, it really is, to me, one of the absolute nicest facilities in the American League. When you see sometimes when they go to some of the older buildings, like the Bojangles Coliseum, when they played Charlotte, you know, and you see the differences between an old building and one of the newer ones. So yeah, they did a great job with it. It you know, again, it's year 10 there, but it's been a great relationship with the Flyers and their farm team, and also being able to have players in pretty close proximity. Maybe not like it was when it was across the parking lot of the Spectrum, but still pretty close by. And the ECHL team is in Reading, so you have everybody in relatively close proximity. It's easier to move players up and down. You got to appreciate that, actually, you know, because all those years in Hershey, but then after the Phantoms were in Philly, when it was in Glens Falls, it might, you know, if they had a trip, you might not be able to get the player quickly. Yeah. When we recall them. So it's in so many ways it's worked out great, and that's a nice place for the rookies game. It has a much more real feel to it, you know, like when it's been at in Voorhees or in Tarrytown in New York, you know, it's felt like a practice facility scrimmage, whereas you put in the big building and it has a real game feel to it.
It really did. I was really impressed with the building. I got to send out my thanks to Neil, the trainer for the Phantoms as well, who had spent some time with me after the game to take a look at my foot. I came down with an injury in the second period. We gutted it out, though. We made it through. We skated our next shift, and we made it through. That'll be a story for another day. But anyway, let's get to the actual games and what we saw on the ice. And we saw two games, Friday night at 7:05 and Saturday night at 5:05. Both games were streamed or telecast. Brian Smith and I did the game on Friday on PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. Game Saturday was streamed as well on NBC Sports Plus. You know, what are your big takeaways from the games? We didn't see all players play both games, you know, but let's kind of start at the top with what you saw out of Tyson Forster. I saw a player that, you know, he looked like he wanted to assert himself physically with that newfound strength that he has, his upper body strength. But he also looked like a player to me that was going, okay, I'm not going to go out and put my body in any bad situations here to start the real training camp behind the eight ball.
For sure. You know, Tyson has been in several of the rookies games. Last year, he had a dominant one in the first game against the Rangers and actually went on to score the overtime winner in the first game. You know, I think it was the year before that, Flyers played the Islanders, and he had a really good first game. Second game, I remember distinctly he had a chance to tie the game on a buzzer beater, a one-timer, in the final 5 seconds of the game. And he was robbed, which is just a great stop. But you know, he asserted himself in those games. Sometimes when you have that last one, you're expected to dominate. Sometimes it doesn't happen. You know, if you go to Friday's game, I thought it was particularly in the first and second periods, he looked heavy on pucks. You know, he wasn't turning pucks over. But he had the Flyers' first scoring chance of the game on Friday. It was a one-timer from the around the dot. Yeah. And you know, and give Garon some credit. He made the stop on that one. I think he had another one-timer attempt, a little higher in the zone, probably a little bit more of a routine save. And then I thought he went quiet. You know, I thought, particularly on Saturday, I don't think he was as noticeable as you would have liked to have seen him in that game. For him to make the Flyers opening night roster, you know, there was no point against him for the rookie games, let's be honest. Really nothing even happens on the ice in rookie camp, other than you don't want him to start the main training camp off on the wrong foot. There is a job for him to win out of camp. If he doesn't elevate his game from what he's shown in the real early going in rookie camp so far, he probably wouldn't start the season with the Flyers, but it's still there, and it's, can change in a hurry. But, you know, as far as a final rookie game goes, you would have liked to have seen the big statement game, like when Oscar Lindblom had a hat trick. You could go back a number of years. James Van Riemsdyk had a 4-goal game. You would have liked to have seen him close that out with a big statement game. It didn't happen, so now you turn the page.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. Will we have liked it? Of course. But is it a harbinger of things to come? Not necessarily. So we'll see where it goes from there when it comes to Tyson Forster. Elliot Tenoya was a guy, centering Tyson Forster. They kind of moved that line around a little bit. They moved Brown up there because he thought he had a lot of jump in Friday's game especially, and made some juggling of the lines to try and generate a little more offense. And it was a pretty low-scoring affair, 2-2 going into the third, and kind of a weird first goal for the Rangers, double deflection off two phantom sticks, lollipopped in. But let's talk about Tenoya, because he's another guy that, you know, Ian LaPerriere talked about after the game, and a guy that, you know, we're really putting in the crosshairs of evaluation, and we're going to do that early in camp as well.
Yeah, and, you know, Denoye is kind of a process guy. He did lead the Phantoms in goals last year, actually a Phantoms rookie goal record.
But 23.
Most likely, when Elliott comes up and sticks in the NHL, it's probably going to be either as a bottom six forward or as that Swiss Army knife type. You can move up and down the lineup. He's going to kill some penalties. He has pretty good speed. You know, chip in some offense, too. I thought that actually in segments of Friday's game, he did some pretty good stuff. He had a keep high in the offensive zone that was pretty good. Just his anticipation was decent. Wasn't making a lot happen offensively, but I just thought, the process-wise, he was pretty close to there, just some timing stuff. And he, too, on Saturday was probably a little quieter than you would have liked to have seen as a guy who's a kind of become a young team leader on the Phantoms and has at least an outside shot at the NHL squad. So, you know, it was the three guys. You know, you went in Forrester, NYA, and you're hoping also that the Brink steps up. And really, it didn't really happen for Brink either this week. And he did have a nice assist on the power play goal in Friday's game. You know, there weren't a lot of goals to go around this weekend, so you kind of remember which ones actually ended up in the net. I would have liked to have seen Crate a little bit more, 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. But, you know, especially this is a big year coming off of the hip surgery. I would have liked to have seen, because he's coming off of an injury season, you know, he's a guy I would have liked to have seen kind of grab the bull by the horns right away. Again, it's early. It can happen. But I really thought that on the whole, it was younger guys, a couple guys in their first camp. You know, those are the guys who kind of stood out a little bit more this weekend, I thought.
Yeah, and Brown was one of those guys. You know, he was all over the play. And I swear they tried to confuse us because they gave him Patrick Brown's number 38. Yeah. I don't know if this is just repurposing gear or what, but it was not Patrick Brown. He is now what, with Boston, I believe so. But you look at the situation, he was a guy just skating, using his legs. I thought that he kind of popped out and flashed a little bit in the game, Bill. And, you know, a couple other guys, you know, I thought that the pairing of Ginning and Bonk was really an interesting one, because Ginning's going to be that guy who's going to really stay home. But I thought Bonk never looked out of place with him at all. It just looked very predictable. And just looking at the two bodies side by side, Bonk's got some weight to put on and some muscle to put on, but it's not a whole heck of a lot. He's a pretty big kid already. And he's still a number of years away.
No, for sure. And they also had him on the power play, too.
Yeah, he was the only player on the power play.
Yeah.
D-man. Yeah.
So that said a lot as to how they'd like to see him develop. You know, Oliver, last season, he did a lot of really good things with London. He really came along as the season went along. The only, the only negative was that he had 10 goals last year, but including playoffs, he went the final 42 without any. So, you know, and he's not going to be a big scorer in the NHL, but he's capable of putting the puck in the net. And 10 was a good total for a season. You would just would like to see maybe a couple in the playoffs or something. But, you know, but in terms of him moving the puck, defending, just his overall poise under pressure, it was good. And they had one hiccup. They were on the ice for a goal against after on a failed clear. That was in the first game. But they bounced right back. And that's just, you learn just as much from that as you know, making a good play on either side of the puck. When a young defenseman does make a mistake or is on the ice, when a mistake gets made by the five-man unit on the ice, how does he respond? And he responded really well. So that was an encouraging sign. And I'll also add that in Saturday's game, since Ginning and Bonk didn't play in the second game, Andre and Granz were pretty good in Saturday's game. I thought particularly Granz. I thought Granz was
– yeah.
I was really happy with what I saw from Granz in the second game.
We kind of look at him as this just, you know, cherry on top, some bonus added to that deal. But he is a second-round pick. He is a big-body defenseman, and sometimes those guys take a little bit longer to develop into NHL players, and we'll see how his camp goes. Let's talk about Andre, though, because, Bill, I've deemed him one of the most interesting players of the training camp for so many reasons, and part of it, which we talked about last week, was the Cam York factor. And getting the players to be what they are in training camp and not be afraid of the mistake. It's such an easier said than done scenario when you're trying to impress, you know, the eyes that are looking down upon you and you're playing for now your job. It's easier said than done to try and put the mistakes away and go, okay, I got to push the pace if that's my game. But Emil Andre, the way he sees the ice, you know, that heads up all the time. He is in constant surveying mode. He's that guy on the side of the highway with the surveying equipment, always looking at what's going on. And the other thing I noticed about him is looking at him on the bench. There's constant engagement in the game. I think he's going to be a player that thinks the game really well.
Yeah, you could see why he was the captain of the World Junior Championship team, because he has that element to him. Very engaged, very communicative, very competitive.
Look, even if it's not his shift, guys come off, he can tell him what he saw.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, he's a student in the game, and that's one of the most encouraging things about Emil. And the other part too is he's fearless. They kept running him on Saturdays. How's he going to handle if he gets hit? How's he going to handle being under pressure? And he handled it fine. And a couple times he gave it back a little bit too. That's and it wasn't even, I don't even think it was his A game, because one thing Andre typically does pretty well, he usually puts shots on net, and he was having trouble actually putting pucks on net. He's missing the net a lot. He's usually that's one of his strengths. But you look at the way he defended, the way he moved the puck out of trouble, and just his overall poise and presence. You know, there was a hierarchy to the defensemen you saw this weekend. In each game, you had one pairing that looked like pros, right? And the other guys, okay, you could see there's some promise there, but there's work to be done. And even, with the young guys, there's always work to be done. But just I mean, to look like professional, players. And that's that was another positive thing this weekend. And the other thing I'd like to touch on real quick is that, some young players have pretty darn good speed, good wheels. Mm-hmm. And one thing the players have wanted to inject in the system is a little bit more speed. And you look at Alex Chernik, you look at Alexi Gendron, and you look at Denver Barkey. And those are three players they've added in the system. All of them have speed to burn. And Tuomala can skate too.
Yeah, Tuomala, just watching him skate so upright. And again, the head is up and just surveying the ice. I was impressed with him coming down that right side on a couple of occasions, getting good scoring opportunities. Look, the lack of finish was there. Their games aren't completely polished right now. I think we saw that as well. But, one of the things, you look at a guy like Gendron and the year he had last year over two different teams in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and he put up huge numbers last year. I don't know what he's going to be at the NHL level, but what he did last year, I think peeled a lot of people to kind of pay attention to what he's going to be able to do this year. And I think he's a really interesting player. But you look at the situation, throughout this camp and with the rookies that are in there, one of the things that we got to see this weekend was two of the goaltenders, Nolan Meyer and Carson Bjarnason, of course, the second round pick, and Bjarnason getting his first really pro look on Saturday night. But let's go to Friday night. Nolan Meyer, I thought he looked really good, Bill, really poised in that situation. He gives up that weird goal there's nothing you can do about that. I thought he settled in after that. I thought he made some real good lateral plays and moves. And I thought he attacked screens really well, got really on the player that was screening him to kind of prevent things from going sideways on a deflected puck off a shin pad or a tip off a screen. I thought he looked pretty I thought he challenged at the right times, took the ice when he could, kept his depth under control when he didn't have to, but I thought he read plays really well. And I think we saw a guy, that had a little bit of success last year in the AHL, be able to take what he learned last year and bring it into his offseason.
Yeah, he's still a young goalie. He's not under NHL contract. I think at some point he may be, whether in the Flyers organization or somewhere else, I guess remains to be seen. But there's promise there. He played well for Reading in the ECHL. And he gained some experience in the American League too. Last year he was impressive in the rookie games. Urson was really the big standout the second game, flirting with a shutout. But I thought in his appearance last year, Meyer looked good, and he looked good. He looked good in Flyers rookie camp. I mean, he deserved that shot in the American League. And goalies take a little longer to develop anyway, as you know. So that's a name to file away that a guy I think is gonna actually have a pretty decent pro career. And I think at some point he might be under contract for someone, but he took a good first step, and you could see why. He definitely was pretty, he was making lucky scrambling kind of saves, right? He looked pretty under control for most of the game. And as you said, they were kind of fluky goals. Whereas on Saturday, Carson Bjarnason. He settled in as they went along. I thought over the final 40 minutes, particularly the final 30 minutes, he was solid. But the first period, he was kind of all over the place. And the wraparound was not a very good goal. Kind of put the puck in himself, actually. Went off of him. But you expect that from an 18-year-old. And, you know, an 18-year-old second-round pick, a lot of pressure on him to stand out and excel. And I thought that, you know, all things considered, he settled in nicely. Sometimes you have a rookie camp and you have four goalies there. This year, you've been able to pay attention to just two guys. And unless there's an injury, I kind of like that arrangement.
I do, too. It allows you them to get into a rhythm and workload, too. You don't want guys standing around. You just don't. It's tough. That's why you don't carry three goalies in the NHL, because one's always standing around, and it's not efficient. Bill, one of the guys that wasn't at camp was Matvei Michkov. We know the reason why. He's got under contract in the Continental Hockey League. But he was loaned to Sochi. I know the other night I saw online that he had seven shots in his first 11 shifts of the game. He's not shy about shooting the pill. What have you seen out of Michkov since the transfer to Sochi?
Well, I saw his first game. Played about 18 minutes. Had to shake a little rust off, I think, in the first half of the game. In the third period, he took over the game. He had two assists in the third period. But he also had several scoring chances. He had the game on his stick, a partial breakaway in overtime. He was the best player with the game on the line as an 18-year-old in that first game. And then I did not see the second one, but you're correct. He had 10 shots on goal in that game, and was just knocking on the door all game long, apparently. And just one of those nights where nothing went in. But there's no question that already at 18 years old, he's an impact player. Honestly, why it bothered me that he wasn't playing in SKA was that he clearly is ready for the KHL, and he's clearly ready to play some real minutes. So he's in a situation now where he's going to get the minutes. He'll have opportunities on the power play. He'll play one goal games and tie games. You know,
situational hockey.
So yeah, so these are the situations you want to see him in, and you know, now I think he's in a positive, at least hockey wise, situation for him.
I'm sure the organization and the brass are thrilled that he's in this situation and not at 13th forward and being scratched like he was.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a positive. I'd like personally at some point to see him try it out at center again.
Yeah,
I think the preseason he was playing center and he didn't look out of position there. And if he can play center too, we know he can play right wing. If he can also play center, that opens all kinds of possibilities. It opens a lot of doors of ways you could take it as he continues to develop. If or when that experiment will renew in Sochi. As it started out in St. Petersburg in the preseason, I don't know, but that, you know, I was surprised at actually how far he'd come in certain areas of his game, because, you know, I didn't really get to look at him very much last season. You see the highlight reels, and those are highlight reels, though. Those are the best plays.
They don't put the wart reels out.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, to get a better picture of a player, though, you need to watch the shift in and shift out, the game in and game out. And, I think he's on a great track so far. We'll see early this coming week how his next game goes. But it's, he's a player who's fun to watch, too. You know, now that he's figures to get a lot of ice time and whatnot, you don't have to worry so much about if he has a bad shift, is he going to sit the rest of the game on the bench? You know, he'll be right back. He'll be right back out there again. So, you don't really worry if he didn't have his best game on a particular day. You can't really get too caught up in the day-to-day, game-to-game, shift-to-shift. Just too long of a season, and development is not linear anyway. So, you could drive yourself nuts trying to nitpick every game, every shift, but I think he's on a great, I think he's on a great path, and I think he's going to have a really strong season.
Yeah, he's high event hockey. He's a guy that will lift your butt out of the seat. He's a price of admission player because of the spectacular skill set. Bill, training camp will get underway this week. Let me ask you about the importance, Bill. You've been covering this game a long time, as I have, but the importance of going into camp with all things settled. It's like in The Godfather. We're going to settle all family business on the day of the christening, right? And you want all the business elements off the ice, contracts, all of that stuff to be settled. No hanging, you know, guys' contracts. And yeah, there's guys that you could sign now that are going to expire at the end of this year, but you wait on them. But you don't have anybody that's not under contract. I think that everybody's kind of coming into this camp knowing what they need to do, what the expectation is per player on and off the ice, per line, per pairing, and also, you know, per team. I think the expectation is really clear of the path here to all these players and coaches and everybody in the organization. I think that's a really important element when you're in the situation that the Flyers are, is that everybody knows what the plan is, where they fit into it, and how they can control it and speed it up or slow it down or whatever by how they perform and how they do their job as pros.
Well, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. You know, when the expectations are clear cut and the opportunities are there, then it's on the players. Then it's up to the players to perform. Those opportunities are there. Hopefully it's a relatively injury free camp. That's something you cannot control going in you know, the plans can suddenly change in a hurry, but it looks like Teddy going in right now. It looks to be a pretty good situation. No one's coming off of, no one's coming off of any, at least pre-camp injuries so far, knock on wood this week, you know? That's, you know, really kind of what you want to see. Players know what to expect just from day one in terms of the skating test. They're facing them this week. You know, last year they did so much skating the first week or so in camp. Then you had a little bit of the dead legs, and you know what you expected. And I don't think Torts minds that a bit. I mean, you're gonna have some games where you might have a little bit less energy than some other teams, but that pays off down the line. And one thing with the Flyers last year was that I thought that they did a pretty good job over the course of the season generally, there were exceptions, but of managing their energy, of staying competitive in games. Yeah. So they weren't and still are not the most talented teams or the elite talent at the top of the lineup, but they fought and they competed in games, and they were a pretty well-conditioned team. And that's something else, too, that you can hear all about the skating test by reputation and whatnot. It's different when you've done it. These guys have a year under their belt with John Tortorella, not too many new faces, a few. And so this year, I think they're equipped to kind of hit the ground running when camp starts. And the other thing too, is that the systems are established. So, you know, there's refreshers, video sessions and whatnot, but you have the same coaching staff. You have mostly the same key players coming back, or guys like Atkinson who played with Torts before, so he could get reacclimated as they roll along. So the table is set there, you know. And then again, then after that, it's all up to the players.
Watching them skate before Flyers rookie camp on Friday, first of all, I walked into the rink, and there is two absolutely stacked benches. I mean, it looked like an NHL game. I mean, you're looking at 12 forwards, 6D. They were rotating three goalies for the practice, but I mean, it was stacked. And Sean Couturier, I thought, moved very well. Cam Atkinson moved very well. Now they're not plowing each other, they're not hitting and the whole thing, and it is just captain skates and scrimmages. But you know, they're full participation. It was great to see, and I think that's an important element. And you know, one of the things that Torts did to manage that energy, in particular in the second half, but when they had a lot of back-to-backs last year and some, you know, 4-6 and 5-7 or 8 and those kind of situations, Torts really leaned off the practices with them. And that's what I want to talk about next, because, you know, we all know of the situation that just took place in Columbus with Mike Babcock. We know of his history in the NHL. Now, there's a lot of good there, a lot of winning. He's a Stanley Cup winning coach. and you know, one coaching Team Canada, one gold, and there's a high pedigree of obviously, you know, talent and coaching, but there's a lack of evolution of, you know, of the position of being a coach and, you know, the way you handle players and the way you handle today's players. And Torts was always a guy that kind of got lumped into that old school mentality. But I think seeing it up close and personal last year, where hey, you can be a coach that's demanding, demands accountability, demands your players do the right things, but also add the human element to it. And one of the things that when I talk to a lot of guys that played for Torts, whether that was Cam Atkinson or Jody Shelley and many others, is they, you know, they said that he cares about you as a person. And maybe that's what Mike Babcock was trying to get across with what happened. It didn't work. He's had to resign in Columbus, and that puts them big time behind the eight ball. But I think we saw that evolution, you know, a coach evolving like Torts last year because, you know, those elements of practice and just probably the way he handles players day to day has changed over the years in the 20 plus years he's been on a bench.
And it is. I think there's still, you know, quite a bit of old school in Torts, but it's, you know, it's not the, Keenan kind of old school though anymore. I think Torts at one point, you know, as something that I think he's learned from over the years. He doesn't coach the Flyers the same way that he coached Tampa Bay. He hasn't coached the Flyers even the same way he coached the Rangers. I think he recognizes what situation they're in, where they want to get to. He's still demanding. You know, again, I think there's still a bit of old school in Torts, but not to a level where players generally feel like that.
A line's been crossed.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're not going to, you know, they're kind of a Christmas Eve bag skate like Keenan laid on them 1 year. Right.
Yeah.
The Herb Brooks kind of method. That just doesn't work anymore. And, you know, and coaches picking on a player and just, you know, for you know, just as an example of old school coaching that wouldn't work anymore. When Mike Keenan was first a Flyers coach, and mind you, again, different era, different times, and you know, Mike had a ton of success, but there are ways that Keenan treated players you just can't do anymore. So when Keenan was Flyers head coach, one of his projects was making a player, you know, toughening Scott Mellenby up. Not as a guy who could throw fists or whatever, but just he felt that, you know, Scotty's dad was the producer of Hockey Night Canada, Ralph Mellenby, and he came from, you know, a relatively comfortable background. And so Keenan gave him hell on a daily basis for being, well, he said, a spoiled rich kid who was soft, and he humiliated him in front of everybody in the locker room on an almost daily basis to test him out and toughen him up. That wouldn't work anymore. No. You cannot do that with players anymore. You can't pick your designated whipping boys, you know, and just beat on them every single day. You know, Keenan also, Keenan would also just randomly go after stars on the team, just even if it wasn't justified, he knew it wasn't justified. Like Mark Howe. Well, who the hell rips Mark Howe? Well, it wasn't done really for Howie. It was done because if he's going to rip Mark Howe, he's going to rip anyone in that room.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little bit of mind games involved. And that's a little old school. And the other thing, too, that players have changed the way they were years ago, you know, they don't really have to listen to the coach as much anymore. And they're not afraid to ask when they're told to do something. Well, why do you want me to do that? And that, you know, an old school coach would just not be able to handle that. You know, you do it because I say to do it.
Yeah.
And
you don't question players, it. You know,
players have more questions now. And that's part of it. They watch a ton more video on their own. Sometimes they'll ask for, remember last year, Torts getting rid of the iPads on the bench. Those players would go back and they'd watch their shift and he felt they were a little too into watching the iPad and not enough to watching the game on the ice.
They were losing feel of the game from watching the iPad.
Right. And that's a, you know, so that's some of the old school that's still in Torts, but Yeah, but by the same token, the next day at practice or whatever, you go over any video you wanted to. The coaching staff does a whole lot of video work, and Torres is very big on that kind of stuff. So so in a lot of ways, that's how you evolve as a coach and how you stay in the game.
Yeah, he said that he showed more video last year. This was probably midway through the season that he had ever shown in his career combined, and that he enjoyed the element of teaching. And teaching the game, you know, playing the right way away from the puck and doing the right things in your D zone and where you, what part of the ice you curl to without the puck and all of those things and how you can make yourself a player to be accounted for, whether you got the biscuit or you don't. And, you know, that evolution, we'll see what happens in Columbus right now. I mean, that puts them in, I think, in a horrible position heading into this season for a team that, you know, made some pretty significant moves this offseason and the year prior, obviously, the addition of Gaudreau and had some horrible injuries last year. We'll see where it goes for Columbus and how that pays off for them. All right, that's going to put a wrap on this episode of Flyers Daily. We'll be back Wednesday. We'll open training camp on Wednesday. We'll get you excited for it and much more to come on Wednesday's edition of Flyers Daily.
Some learn, many do, cover up.